everyone, and welcome back, of course, to the Research Talks podcast with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So, another week gone by, a cooler week, which I think was a welcome for most people. But how are things been going, Alan? What's been across your desk this week that's worthy of note, do you think?
Well, I think the big development this week, and it has been very quiet on the markets all round, I think everyone would agree. But, of course, it was the deal announced by First Class Metals with Ingrand, and it's really quite revolutionary on so many levels. And you know, I think it's a move that's going to revolutionise the mining industry. You know, once they start to get some real traction, it's very exciting. But I'll come to that in a second.
Yeah.
It's been quiet talk. And sunshine, walking the dogs. Very little else to report.
Good, nice, good. Well, yes, you are going to focus on First Class Metals and maybe clear up some of the maybe confusion or concerns around what's been going on here. But before we get on to that, Dan, anything worthy of note from your point of view?
Yeah, it's been a little bit quieter on the news flow front. But I think what's been nice to see over the last couple of days is that gold, after having its worst quarter in a number of years, it's now three sessions straight where it's been up by a decent amount, perhaps more than 1%. It's certainly up 1.3% now. It's just under 4,200 an ounce. And that's good. I mean, it's good, obviously, because of the fact that we're very heavily weighted on this podcast towards mining stocks. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people lost faith in the bull market over the last few months. But really, as I've said on here, and as Rick Rule said to you, and a number of experts say, in previous bull runs, it's gone down by more than it has. I think it's about 20% from highs. It's gone down by more than that in past bull runs. And past bull runs have pretty much universally been much, much longer than the one we've seen over the last couple of years. And I think some, like the likes of JP Morgan, are still calling. I want to say 6,000 an ounce. It might be 5,000. 6,000 does seem a bit punchy by the end of the year. So, I think it was triggered a little bit by the jobs data, which came in quite soft from the US, and the fact that the money supply has increased by its largest amount which obviously helps. And it has helped Bitcoin as well, I should say, although that still does remain pretty weak. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, hopefully this is a bit of a sustained run up over the summer, because that will make up for the absence of news flow that we generally see over these months. We can get a bit of a lift just from the fact that gold prices and silver as well, obviously, going up. Then yeah, we might have a decent few months. We'll see. See what this looks like next week when we
absolutely. No, you're right, though. And as we've said before a number of times, the bull case is still intact. The Iran situation threw a bit of a spanner in the works there, I think, coupled with a general sort of pullback, which is expected after a bull run. But we're still in the early innings. It's nine innings total, isn't it, I think? And the general consensus when I speak to people who talk in that terms is the third innings. If you read which I did read the highlights of the In Gold We Trust report. You need a lot of time to read that. It's a massive report by Ronnie Stoffler. He's got a target of 8,000 plus on gold by the end of the decade.
8,000 plus. Wow, that's good. Yeah,
absolutely.
I think he's right.
Yeah, well, I think he probably is. And Middle Cope always says that it's your last chance to buy silver under 100. US dollars. I think the target on that is a minimum of 3 from most people, including Peter Crouch, for example, who I know you know as well, Dan. So, all we can do is wait and see. Hopefully that does give us some things to watch out for over the summer when the general markets go quieter. At least you can see some of your portfolio maybe reflecting that a little bit. But anyway, Alan, so First Class Metals then, of course, they did announce that and it's now been officially closed with the amount disclosed. But I think there's been some, what I understand, a little bit of sort of confusion or people not really understanding the significance of the deal. But talk us through that first class deal, if you can, please, and what it means, do you think?
Well, it's a huge deal in terms of what it means for first class metals and, of course, the mining industry itself. And just really looking to the build up towards this deal being completed. It was actually first talked about in March last year, and it's taken a long time to come to fruition. But I think in order to understand it, you've got to look at what Ingrand are trying to do. And of course, Ingrand is spelled NGRND. Their website is ngrnd.io for anyone that wants to take a look. Let's look at First Class in the run-up to this. Now, the company, of course, endured a torrid year last year with the 79th Group debacle, and, you know, full credit to James Knowles, Mark Sale, and the team for navigating through those choppy waters and emerging the other side. And, of course, a lot of support for the company in the market. In March, of course, the company raised $400,000 from retail investors, oversubscribed, initially went for $250,000, raised $400,000 at $1.5 billion, of course, completed convertible loans worth $650,000. And all this was to do with the developments taking place at Sunbeam. And, of course, at Sunbeam, they saw incredible process or progress during the year, both at Roy and Pettigrew. The visible gold in the Sunbeam drill core reinforced the project's potential, and of course there's now everything to play for. But I think the company was looking to put itself on a firmer footing financially before moving to develop this. And I think that there are a bunch of projects and assets within the First Class Metals portfolio, and these very much have been prioritised by the company. They've got the core four, of course, North Hemlo. They've also there's also the Zigzag lithium and lithium project that was recently completed. And then there was completed too. So the scene has very much been set for First Class to move forward. And then, of course, on the 30th of June, the company announced that they had closed the KERS deal. And, of course, KERS has 386,465 ounces of gold. That is fully verified. It was purchased by Ingrand, and the nature of the project means that the company or Ingrand has initially purchased 77,293, what the company refers to as eligible ounces, with a minimum purchase threshold of 60% of those eligible ounces in the first year. Now, of course, this also varies according to the nature of the asset. Currently, we have an inferred asset at the property. As Mark Sale has said, if the company continues to drill, if it finds or if it extends what is already in the ground at KERS, that will then further add to the prospectivity, and Ingrand will then be in a position to purchase more tokens. In addition, once that asset moves from inferred to indicated, it will increase the value of the token. So any new discoveries, any increase in the status of the asset will add additional tokens and additional value. So this is absolutely huge. Before we look at what it means for First Class, let's take a look at Ingrand. Now, Ingrand has a value proposition, and it's very much in keeping with where we are in the world now in regard to assets in the ground. And of course, gold is a store of value. It's a store of value. It's a safe haven asset in uncertain times, and it's increasingly important. Dan, of course, you mentioned the torrid quarter that gold has had, and but you know, the bullish outlook for the rest of the year. So Enground have said that there are something like 184,000 tons of greenfield or brownfield gold mineral resources that are still in the ground around the world. Now, that's fine and good. So if gold bullion is stored in a safe, then, of course, to extract that is a carbon intensive process, and it's mining is ultimately a dirty business. And of course, the advantage that Enground offer is that for every ounce of gold that's extracted, carbon credits or the carbon credit process is avoided completely. It also means that that land can be used for other purposes. It's very climate positive, it's ESG positive, and of course there's no carbon released in the process that Enground go through with validating the asset. So the eligible assets have to be based on either a JORC rating for the asset or an N 43101, which is the Canadian method of valuing assets in the ground. And what Enground do, they will tokenize the asset. And of course, in doing so, they unlock the liquidity and scalability of the opportunity. There's something like 215 million crypto wallets, and Enground estimates something like a $1.6 trillion addressable market around the world. And of course, investors nowadays are increasingly moving towards crypto and digital and storing their assets in wallets. We've talked, Mark and Dan over the years about NFTs and tokenizing the value of art and property and other assets, and this is the latest move. But it also ties in very solidly with carbon neutral, with working towards a greener world. Enground have something like 1.9 million ounces of gold already under agreements with other gold owners, plenty more to come in the pipeline. And of course, they are tokenizing and capping the number of tokens available in this market to drive further value. So what does this mean for Kurs? To go back again, they've purchased an initial 77,293 eligible ounces. That's worth, at the current spot price of $138 per ounce, it's worth $10.4 million to First Class. And of course, Enground then take that asset and tokenize it. This is absolutely huge. So at a stroke, something like £7 million sterling has been added to the value of First Class Metals. And of course, this is just the start. There are other assets under agreement already. And given the quality of the asset at Sunbeam and possibly North Hemlo as well, it's quite possible that Enground could revisit the opportunities that the First Class have in its portfolio. And of course, this will be rolled out to other companies too. So it's a big step down the road. It also provides liquidity to First Class Metals. It means they have further cash in the coffers to go and accelerate the work that they're undertaking at Sunbeam to further establish the asset and establish the size and scale of the opportunity there. And of course, in line with the other assets the company has, it now fully owns, or it now has completed its 80% buy into the Zigzag asset. That can be progressed too. In short, it just really materially changes the investment proposition for First Class Metals. And it does so while the share price is still trading at just 3.2p. So really, we have seen a bit of a blip up in the price since the Kurs deal or the closing of the Kurs deal was announced, but it's come back over the past day or so. So I think at this level, it's an absolute no-brainer. And I think this is the first of many deals we're going to see of this nature.
Well, indeed, I remember I interviewed Mark Sale on this when it was announced a few weeks ago. And yeah, it sounds revolutionary to the mining sector here, sort of tokenizing assets in the ground, that there's a value there, but sort of paid not to mine effectively.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always these different uses for tokenization in crypto, isn't there? But I mean, Dan, you interviewed Mark this week on this news. What did you think, and what do you think some of the concerns are amongst investors?
Yeah, well, in terms of the revolutionary potential, I think you've both hit the nail on the head there. And I guess the share price reaction could be down to the fact that it is kind of proof of concept, and people are a little bit uncomfortable with the new, how new it is, and the fact that it does take a little bit of explanation to get across the value. But, you know, we tokenization interest in that is only growing. We sort of, it seems to ebb and flow, the amount that sometimes you hear it being talked about all the time, sometimes it gets a bit quiet, but it's always there and it's growing. And, you know, if they can pull this off, then I think it's going to be huge. And the interview with Mark that I did, I thought was really interesting. He certainly seems confident in where it's going. And of course, the money that they get from it is just non-dilutive funding, a lot of it, to advance the other assets, which, you know, could in turn become further tokenization opportunities. So there is the potential for a sort of virtuous circle model here to move things forward. And I'm really interested to see how it performs moving forward. I have a position, I'm a holder, and I intend to hold on and see how this one plays out, because I think it's been a little bit unfairly treated perhaps this week.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it monetizes something that otherwise is a bit of a back burner project for First Class. I think it's not their number one focus. I mean, I think they'll still do work on it and build up the ounces, and I think that ties into how they monetize from Endground, right? But it's monetizing something that wouldn't ordinarily be monetized and just be a cost. So it's only a good thing.
It is. And I think you've got to consider too that, you know, they've already got the cash in the bank for those first ounces. You know, that's the thing. So if investors are uncertain about it, well, the cash is already in the bank from the transaction. So surely with any transaction, you know, when you're engaged in mining, when you earn cash for executing a transaction, that's a good thing. So that's what's happened in this case. And if it changes from inferred to indicated, that increases the value again. So the tokens increase in value, therefore more money into First Class. And again, if First Class drill occurs, they find another seam of gold that's hitherto undiscovered. Again, further tokens further tokens are issued, more cash into First Class coffers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just a final point. I think all things aside, I think the company should be applauded for actually just trying something different in this sector. I mean, it's a very tried and tested route that we're all used to. And, you know, if you can monetize a non-core asset in that way while you're focusing on other things, then why not give it a go? I think it's really good in that sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you both. So, Dan, Talon then, new London listing with assets in North America, in Ontario.
Yeah, so Talon's one you spoke to the other day, and having listened to that interview and looked at everything the company's put out, I don't think it's just interesting because it's a new ground floor opportunity. I think the project also has a great deal of potential that I want to talk about. So Talon is listed for a reverse takeover recently. In the last couple of weeks, and it's now focused on building a gold exploration platform. That's the long-term plan, and its first asset is the Eagle Lake Gold Project in Ontario, Canada, where it owns 90%. So Eagle Lake is interesting for a few reasons. First of all, there's the timing. As we've been talking about, gold's had a strong run. It's pulled back over the last couple of months, though the last few days, like I was saying, have been much stronger. And the broader backdrop remains very supportive. Alex King from Talon made this point in your interview, Mark. You know, gold exploration has been overlooked for a long time, and there are not enough new discoveries moving towards development. So if you can find a credible early stage gold story in the right jurisdiction with the right setup, then it's definitely worth paying attention. And I think we probably all know that, but I wanted to mention it as I think it can be taken for granted. And I generally do believe that we're going to see a lot more gold strength from here for the reasons I was saying before. So back to Eagle Lake, and the project also has a great location. It sits in the Dryden Gold District in northwestern Ontario. Ontario itself is, of course, a tier one mining jurisdiction with the great infrastructure skills and a clear permitting framework. It's a place you want to do business in this sector. But more specifically, Eagle Lake sits within the Wabagoon sub-province, which is an Archean greenstone settings perspective for structurally controlled gold mineralization. And the local area around Dryden is seeing a lot of activity. There's juniors staking and exploring along major structural corridors, and some have attracted backing from much larger mining groups. For example, there's Dryden Gold, which is backed by Alamos and Centerra, Canorland Minerals, backed by Sumitomo and Centerra again, and Next Gold's Goliath Complex, around 45 kilometers from Eagle Lake, which has a 2.9 million ounce gold resource. So that doesn't mean Talon's going to make a discovery. We can't say that now, but it does show that this is a district people are taking seriously. So, you know, Eagle Lake is in a fertile belt. It's got infrastructure, active neighbors, and majors paying attention to the wider area. So then there's also the project itself. Eagle Lake covers just under, covers 95 contiguous claims. And what stands out is the combination of very high-grade historic results and limited modern exploration. Limited exploration at all, I think, really. Historic work that has taken place has identified multiple gold-bearing zones across the property. Standout number is surface sampling of up to 204 grams per tonne gold at the Parker Shear area. There's also high-grade rock samples from more recent work in 2025, which include 75.7 grams a ton, 52.5 grams a ton, and 25.4% grams a ton gold. These are surface samples; they're not a resource or from deeper drilling. And grab samples can be selective, but they do show gold is present and in places present at very high grades. So that's a good start. The more interesting point to me is how underexplored Eagle Lake still is. I mean, today only 26 historic drill holes have been completed, and none went deeper than 155 meters. So all this together looks like a classic early stage exploration company setup. Got high grade at gold at surface, lots of target areas, strong regional address, but little meaningful testing at depth. And that's what Talon is now trying to change. The work started this week. The company announced the start of its phase one exploration program at the project. Critical Discoveries has been appointed to advance exploration, and the field program is focused on validating and expanding multiple high-grade gold targets. So the work includes channel sampling from outcropping mineralization, trenching, bedrock exposures, and also systematic prospecting across 8 target areas. The aim is to integrate those results with the historic data, then prioritize targets ahead of drilling. This is a point Alex stressed in your interview, Mark. Talon doesn't want to rush a rig onto the property just for the sake of drilling. It wants to reopen and verify old trenches, map the ground properly, replicate historic sampling where it can, and get comfortable with the targets first. Once it's done that, the company is planning an initial 2,000-meter diamond drill program in the fourth quarter, so not too long. That program is expected to be split into 2 phases of around 1,000 meters each. This means that the first phase can help guide the second, which is always useful. And the main objective is to test for depth and continuity. So Fournieri Bay is the most tested area historically. Parker Shear is the emerging high-grade target, roughly a kilometer away, that had that really high-grade 200 grams a ton plus in sample that I mentioned earlier. So if Talon can show a mineralized system between those areas or confirm continuity at depth beneath the surface grades, then the story will become much more interesting very quickly. It's also important to note that this isn't completely binary. The company already knows the property's mineralized, questions whether that mineralization has scale, you know, continuity and enough grade to become a serious exploration story. And as we all know, that might take a few work programs to ultimately show what the true potential is. But I think my point really is that not like an all or nothing drill campaign like we see with some some projects. So, and also I should mention, like an increasing number of explorers, Talon's also using machine learning to support its efforts. That's not to overhype the AI angle, given AI is a bit of a buzzword at the moment, but it's more useful because Ontario has huge amounts of public standardized exploration data. So I guess Talon and its partner on the AI front plenty to work with, you know, for refining Eagle Lake targets and potentially identifying new opportunities across the wider area moving forward. So a quick note on the team that also looks very credible for this stage. Alex King's a geologist with 16 years experience. Ben Hodges brings finance experience. I believe he's at Guardian Metal. Bert Monroe has gold exploration and development experience through Cora Gold and previously Hummingbird. And Kieran Morzaria adds further mining and corporate finance experience. So that's what you want to see at this stage, all of that. And bringing it together, Talon's, it's still very early stage. There isn't a resource at the moment. The historic results need verification and the drill bit still has to prove everything up. But at a market cap of around £8 million, it gives investors exposure to a high-grade underexplored gold project in a strong district where work is now underway and drilling is, you know, what, like 6 months, perhaps less if it's in Q4. So, you know, if gold sentiment continues to strengthen again, and if Talon starts to release encouraging results ahead of drilling, then interest could begin to build quickly before the drill bit begins to turn, as we see a lot of the time. And if that drilling then confirms meaningful mineralization at depth, then this could move from, you know, an interesting story to a more serious discovery story quite quickly. It's definitely on my watch list and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Dan. Yeah, a nice new London listing over in with projects in Ontario, so that's great to hear. Yeah. And I like talking to the CEO as well, so it's definitely one to keep an eye on, definitely.
Excellent.
Okay, Alan, Trifast then. Tell us the latest on Trifast, if you can.
Sure. So we spoke about Trifast back in early May. The company put out a trading update on what was really a year. Well, it's been several years of transformation. The company, of course, is the it sells fixtures, fittings, fasteners, sheet metal fasteners, flat packs, plastic hardware, cable fittings. In other words, when you go into a DIY store, all those little bags you see hang up with the various little bolts and bits and pieces and funny shaped objects. That's what Trifast do. It's what they supply. And they do this around the world. So as you can imagine, to produce, package, and distribute something like that is a pretty huge task. But it's done so very successfully. In fact, the company started life in Uckfield, just up the road from where I live. And they have, over the past year, They've migrated to a new distribution centre up in the Midlands, and that process has now been complete. It's now open and up and running. So the challenge the company has always faced, I think, is firstly, it's not an exciting, sexy company, like a mining company or first classes moving to crypto as we discussed just now. But it is a real cash generator. And it pays a dividend, which a lot of investors will like to hear, particularly for a company this size. So the company's got a market cap of 98 million. The share price is currently trading at 70p, has been as high as 88 or 89p on the year, in fact, and as low as 56p. And it's just come off those lows now. We've had a set of 4-year results, but as the dust settles, it does seem that a real opportunity in value has emerged. Strong support from institutions. Slater Investments holds 8.9%. Harwood Capital Management holding 17%. And also the major shareholder and board member Nicholas Mills bought 1.5 million shares at 59.75p back in March, spending just under £900,000. So if that isn't skin of the game, I don't know what is. So July 2nd, yesterday, the company announced the full-year results. Revenues came in at 207 million as forecast, and that's compared to 223 million last year. But there's a reason behind this. The change in revenue or the fall in revenue reflects, the company says, its strategic position, which is to focus on revenue quality. Gross margins are now at 30% compared to 28% previously. Underlying EBIT at 16.3 million versus just under 15 million previously. Also, EBIT margin has risen to 7.8% from 6.7%. And that, you know, when you consider each little bag of items that sells, you know, that's a big shift, you know, considering the volume of items that are sold by Trifast. The company announced a decrease in net debt. Net debt now stands at 16 million compared to 17.4 million. And off the back of that, even though the revenues have fallen, the company's increased its dividend to 1.9p from 1.8p, in line with its progressive dividend policy and confidence in future cash generation. The company implemented a program, Recover, Rebuild and Resilience. This is the first year of that. And the company's aim from this program is to take its EBIT margin to 10%. Currently it's 7.8%, so they're heading in the right direction. The company also implemented Project Ignite, which is to use Microsoft D365 to network throughout its distribution network. The shared surface capability in Hungary has been launched by the group. It's also exited successfully from Malaysia, and the smart infrastructure that is being built from this is now represents 17% of the portfolio. It's targeting 30% by 2030. In its regions of operation, it's seen growth in North America. UK and Europe have been very profitable. India in particular is scaling up rapidly, and it's seeing really, really positive momentum into 2027. So what does this mean then for the investment proposition? Well, broker Zeus has initiated coverage, and the company looked across the numbers and it cites what Trifast have achieved as a deliberate and increasingly successful pivot towards prioritizing quality of revenue. So those high value, small margin little bags of fittings, fixtures and fittings, the company has now drilled down into those and it's looking for the most profitable areas and it's focusing solely on those, and it's actually cutting out. So it's stopping distributing the less profitable stuff, which is why the revenues have fallen this year, but the margins have increased. So it's a brave move by the group. Zeus says that gross margin is the engine of progress here. And to grow absolute profit by shrinking the top line is a brave and rare combination. But it really does what Trifast have achieved this year, points to the success of these structural changes rather than just cyclical change on the basis of the macro backdrop. So Zeus says, following these results, and this is analyst Andy Hansen at Zeus, using discounted cash flow forecasts and peer group analysis, the industrial components sector trades on a median average of 15.7 times price earnings. Trifast, by contrast, trades on just 8.9 price earnings, which is a material discount. And Zeus believes that with these changes that company has made to focus on quality revenue, it's materially undervalued. So it's increased its price target, or taken its price target to 104p from the current 70p where the company sits now. Now, when you consider this company pays a dividend, there's an opportunity, I think, now after these full year results to buy into this growth story, to buy into the growth story, potential upside of about 30%, and also, of course, an annual dividend. So I think this is something that could possibly, for a period of time, match some of the exciting growth we see in our mining stocks.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Alan. As you say, perhaps not as secure is exciting, but you often you're at a different stage in life to us. So maybe you know you.
Yeah, yeah, it might.
Had a lot of excitement in your life, I think, and now it's about it's capital preservation and yeah, just steady away, right? I think. I mean, I don't know if you like some excitement as well. I'm not saying you're a boring chap, but but yeah, it's nice to hear some of the more steady away ones, let's say, that give you a steady away dividend. So thank you. And you are still an exciting chap, by the way. You still ride motorbikes, so you know you've still got it.
That's very kind of you to say so, Mark. My wife might not agree with you, but there we go.
Right. Well, anyway, Dan finishes off with Buxton Resources, then, because this is exciting, I think.
Yeah, Buxton is one I wanted to come back to because the company now looks like it's entering a really active period, and with market cap at the moment of around 22 million Aussie dollars, so roughly 11 million pounds, I think there's real scope for the story to develop from here if the next few months go well and perhaps the valuation to go with it. That's why I'm a holder myself. So Buxton has a fairly wide portfolio of assets, but for now I want to focus on the two areas likely to drive the most near-term news flow. First, the Madman project in Western Australia, where drilling has just started, and second, the Arizona copper portfolio, where Buxton has just completed the sale of its Copper Wolf joint venture interest to IGO while retaining 100% ownership of other highly prospective ground nearby. So a key point is that Buxton is now very well financed and moving into a work-heavy period. The company recently completed a placing for roughly 1.15 million Aussie dollars, and that came after another larger financing earlier in the year, as well as the Copper Wolf asset sale, which brought in just under 6 million Aussie dollars plus 168,000 US dollars in property acquisition funds. So Buxton now has cash, projects, and a lot of work to get on with. And there's also an interesting shareholder angle. The latest placing was driven by inbound interest from UK investors, including a cornerstone investor who had previously been a major shareholder in Greatland Gold. That's, of course, relevant because Buxton's chairman, Gervase Heddle, was the former CEO of Greatland and helped lead the company through the Javier on Discovery story. So there's clearly some Greatland money looking at Buxton and thinking, you know, could this be another early stage Discovery story with serious upside? And they want to get in on the action early and hold on to get those multiples of returns. So that brings us to Madman. Madman is the exciting, high risk, high impact part of the near-term story. Projects in Western Australia's Paterson region. And Buxton is drilling what it describes as a Havieron-style gold-copper magnetic anomaly. So that's the obvious comparison. Havieron was the discovery that transformed Greatland Gold, as we all know. And Madman is being tested because it has a discrete bullseye anomaly with strong similarities to that project. Importantly, Buxton believes the target could be shallower than the one responsible for Havieron. Company's modeling suggests the target is around 220 meters below surface. So if mineralization is there, then you know, in theory, it could be easier to access than Havieron or a deeper target, which is good for the economics moving forward and perhaps timelines to bring something into production. But this is the first proper test. There's been no previous on-ground exploration over the anomaly, so investors need to understand that this is speculative. The drill bit has to prove something's there. And the good news then is that Buxton has now started drilling at Madman with McKay Drilling now on site. The program includes a water bore and two deep diamond holes designed to test the geophysical anomaly. If those holes come back showing the right geology, right alteration, and ideally some decent gold copper mineralization, I wouldn't be surprised to see the market look at Buxton very differently and very quickly. So that's the moonshot part of the story. But Madman isn't all Buxton has. This isn't so binary like that as it is with other stocks that perhaps got all their eggs in one basket. The Arizona portfolio is also very important. Buxton just completed the sale of its 49% interest in the Copper Wolf joint venture assets to IGO, as I mentioned. That deal brings in cash, but crucially, Buxton retains 100% ownership of prospective ground covering roughly 30.5 square kilometers in Arizona's porphyry copper belt, including interesting areas called Wolverine, Sun Devil, and Aztecs. It also removes IGO's right of first refusal over Buxton's Arizona tenure. So that means Buxton now has full autonomy to advance, acquire, or transact on those Arizona copper projects. So just quickly on the three main areas, Wolverine looks particularly interesting. The company describes it as an undrilled extension of the copper wolf porphyry system at surface. There's porphyry dikes, veining, alteration, and copper molybdenum anomalism, to follow up on. Meanwhile, Sun Devil and Aztecs also show porphyry-style targets with surface copper molybdenum and silver anomalism. So once the IGO deal is fully in the rearview mirror, Buxton can start ramping that Arizona work back up. And one point Gervais made in your interview with him, Mark, really stood out to me because Buxton has projects in Australia and Arizona, it can work different parts of the portfolio at different times of the year. So, you know, right now it's peak field season in Western Australia. You know, it gets too hot there and then Arizona can become the focus. So all being well, Buxton can keep exploration and drilling moving, keep news flow coming and keep giving itself chances to create shareholder value across the entire year. And that's the attraction to me. You know, Madman is risky, but potentially very exciting. Arizona gives the company another major copper angle. The balance sheet is now much stronger. And that UK placing suggests some sticky discovery-minded capital is coming in that isn't going to leave too quickly. So, you know, just to round up, this is still early stage exploration, but that's what we like about it. If Buxton can turn this funding position into a steady stream of meaningful exploration results over the coming months and then move on to Arizona, then from this valuation, it could become a very interesting year for shareholders. And that's why I've positioned early.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as we know, the success that Gervais had at Greatland Gold, and this looks like you can never be 100% sure on the repeat, but it's probably the closest you're going to get, right? And I think that backing of that shareholder who backed him in Greatland Gold, he obviously, or she, for that matter, don't know who it is, believes the same. So, yeah, it's an exciting one for sure, because I know Gervais has had a lot of offers over the years, opportunities to come back, and he's picked this one. So I think... You know, we focus all our Market Musings podcasts on the people in the business. And I think the fact that he's got involved in this and it's a very similar looking target to Javier on is something to get excited about. So, yes, I have exposure to that as well. So, yeah, we'll see. It's exciting times for that company, though, as well as Talon FCM and Trifast as well. Well, thank you both for your time, as always. Do enjoy the weekend, then we'll see. Alan, you're not with us next week, are you?
No, I'm off next week. I'll be probably at about this time on Friday. I'll be on the route of the Tour de France down near Bordeaux. So that's the plan anyway.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Very nice.
But,
excellent. Well, enjoy that, Alan, and we'll speak to you when you're back.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Dan. Have a great weekend, guys.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programmes at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.